Welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation with the people shaping our future. Each week on the program, we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, research, student life, and today, speech pathology. We are visiting with Baylor University professor and endowed chair of the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders, Dr. Diane Loeb. My name is Derek Smith, and we are pleased to bring you Baylor Connections each week here on 103.3 KWBU-FM and online at baylor.edu/connections. And Dr. Loeb, welcome to the program. Glad to have you here. Now, one of the great offerings from the Communication Sciences and Disorders Department of Baylor is the Speech, Language, and Hearing Clinic. And we're going to talk about that as the show goes on. But I want to ask you, you came to Baylor in July, but you've been working in speech pathology for many, many years, the last 25 years at Kansas University. And from doing some stories on speech, hearing, and clinics in the past, they almost seem like a place where miracles happen, people learning to communicate, regaining lost skills. Is that something that you've seen, and why is this field so meaningful to you?
Well, it absolutely is a field where miracles happen every day. If you think about it, just the process of communication of a young baby being born and then over a short period of time learning how to communicate and to be able to express one's needs and wants and desires to one another, that really is a miracle that we have that ability to communicate with one another and think creatively and do creative things through our speech and language. So when that's disrupted, a lot of things change in one's life and in one's dreams and plans for the future. So it's a really great opportunity for speech-language pathologists and audiologists to help others improve the quality of their life when something goes wrong or they're not able to communicate.
And you do that in a lot of creative ways, which we will talk about. But let's first talk about the speech, language, and hearing clinic. I know it's really six clinics in one. Can you give us a little bit of a rundown of what those services look like?
Yes, we do have, as you said, six clinics in one. We have some specialty clinics as well as a more general clinic. Our speech and language clinic is a more general clinic where we see children and adults who have speech, language, stuttering, voice, articulation, which means speech sounds, and feeding and swallowing disorders. And so that's the largest and comprises the most of our population of the clients that we see there. We currently, as a matter of fact, have seen about 184 clients just this semester alone. Another clinic is our neural rehabilitation clinic, and this is for patients who've had strokes, traumatic brain injury, cognitive disorders, or Parkinson's. Then we also have a language and articulation preschool, and this serves 2 to 5-year-old children with moderate to severe speech and language disorders and delays. We also serve children with autism, and the Reynolds family provided an endowment for this that's instrumental to growing and establishing this program, and we hope to expand that in the future. Another clinic is our audiology clinic, which has state-of-the-art audiology booths and mechanisms for assessing hearing and testing hearing aids and developing hearing aids for individuals. And then we also have a language and literacy clinic, which serves preschool and school-age children. Actually, we serve all the way up to 18 years of age in helping individuals with their reading, writing, and spelling skills, as well as their oral language skills. Some individuals have a diagnosis of dyslexia. And again, this endowments from the Reynolds family have really helped us to purchase tests, equipment, and materials for assessment and intervention. And then one of the things we're known for quite a bit is a program called Camp Success. And this is run 1 month in the summer, and it's supported by Scottish Rite. And this has been since 2003, based on a grant written by Dr. Ritter there, who's a professor in our department. And they provided, Scottish Rite's provided funding for over 14 years for Camp Success. And this is an intensive treatment for children who are aged 4 to 18 for language and reading disorders or dyslexia. It's basically 12 hours of therapy over a 4-week period or 3 hours a day in the summer. And we started with 24 in 2003, and we currently had 84 participants this last summer.
I actually have a little bit of personal experience with the clinic, and this was going back several years ago, and so I got to kind of see it firsthand. So I'm a public address announcer for Baylor Athletics, and I was experiencing some vocal troubles, having difficulty yelling. My voice was just really tired. So I actually was able to go to the clinic, and get some lessons in how to use your voice and speak from your stomach, and it's actually saved a lot of wear and tear. So I have some firsthand experience, but what I remember, what leaped out at me when I was in there is it was, you know, like you just kind of described, it was children, their moms mm-hmm. bringing them in to help them, you know, maybe get up to speed with some of their peers in terms mm-hmm. of their abilities to communicate. There was a gentleman I talked to a little bit who had had a stroke, and he was slowly regaining his function, and it just really struck me that it was all different aspects of the community coming together, and that seems like a very special thing.
It really is. I mean, we serve from birth through the end of life, so it's a very special opportunity to serve our community in a very meaningful way and help individuals to improve their quality of life through their communication skills.
And something fairly simple like me all the way up to some pretty in-depth stuff, obviously.
Absolutely, absolutely. We've actually been, now that you mentioned the voice component, we also have expanded that, and we're now working with singers on campus and actually conducting research to help better understand the dynamics that are involved with hygiene, vocal hygiene, and improving and maintaining great singing voices.
So it really is the whole spectrum. In fact, I'm going to ask you a little bit later on in the show some of the different ways that you all work with singers. Some pretty compelling stuff, I think. Also want to let listeners know that a little bit later on, we'll talk about how the community, you know, if things we talk about strike a chord with you, for you or someone you know, how you can get involved with the Baylor Speech Language and Hearing Clinics yourself. Obviously, from an educational standpoint, it's important to have these opportunities for students. But what does it mean for the community to have this resource, and then on a broader level for Baylor as a research and teaching university to be able to offer a service like this?
That's a great question. I think for the community, it really works both ways. We're a training institution, so it helps our students to have great experience and a wide breadth of experience of working and helping to become and train to be speech-language pathologists. As we reach out to the community, also the community benefits, because many individuals who perhaps can't be seen for private services or in clinics across the state or in Waco, or maybe their insurance no longer has funding available for them to receive services, they oftentimes come to the clinic and we're able to provide services for them there.
What is the relationship between the clinics here at Baylor and the broader Central Texas medical community? How do you complement what they do?
Well, I think that in some cases, if individual's insurance runs out or they're not able to pay for it, we can then work with that individual to try to help provide them the therapy that they need. We certainly have an ethical and moral obligation to refer out, and then other individuals might refer to us too. We also work in terms of research with other institutions in the community.
How is the field growing? Can you give us an idea of just how much it's doing so?
Well, you're right. The field has continued to grow over the past, 30 years. And part of that is due to our awareness of communication disorders and our being able to better diagnose them and identify them. So that's one of the things. So the need has continually increased. We are also able to save babies who would who may not have been able to be saved in the past. And so there are more babies born preterm. And actually, that's an area of my specialty that I work with that group of children. And so a number of those individuals will go on to have speech and language delays or disorders. We also understand reading disorders better and understand that oral language is a major component of that. So that has given an increase to the number of speech-language pathologists that are needed and people who need our services. And then, of course, an increased number of individuals who are aging and those who are continuing to live longer, who might have dementia or Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, or strokes. Those are individuals with whom we might work as well. So a lot of societal factors have contributed to the increased need. And also, we've just not many of our programs across the country are not able to keep up with the demand of providing speech-language pathology services. But however, at Baylor, I think this is the one blessing that we've had there from our anonymous gift that we received a few years ago is that we are expanding our graduate program, and we will be building a PhD program in the next few years. And it gives us some amazing and wonderful opportunities to contribute to the community and to the state and hopefully nationally through our PhD program and our graduate program.
Well, you mentioned that gift. Let me ask you about that. So 2 years ago, the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders received an anonymous $10 million gift. So obviously very transformative for what you all are able to do. Most visible changes are you moved to the Cashin Academic Building from Neil Morris Hall, a bigger, better clinic expanded to 18,000 feet. Let's talk about that. You just mentioned, obviously, right off the bat, graduate programs and PhD programs are something we'll be seeing in the future.
Yes, it's been an amazing opportunity that's been placed in front of us. In fact, you use the right word there, transformational, because it really is transforming what we're doing at Baylor, what we're able to do in the community, what we're able to do for the state of Texas, and for what we'll be able to do nationally. It has such far-reaching possibilities, and is a true blessing to us. As you know, I'm new to the program, but I can give you some background before the gift. So we were at about 150 clients before the gift, but now we're at around 184. Part of that, we'd like to see that continue to grow, and we moved from 17 treatment rooms to 27, wow, which will hopefully continue to grow in our development. And those, of course, are state-of-the-art treatment rooms, so they have the video and the audio that allow us to do the kinds of things that we couldn't do before in terms of supervising our clients and helping our students to be great clinicians. We also have new state-of-the-art research labs. We've moved from 42 graduate master's level students to 68 in
wow,
just a few years. And by 2020, we'll have 100 graduate students. And that's our projected number that we're trying to obtain. And as I said, as we can graduate and train more graduate students to go out into the field, it will meet the needs of the community in a larger capacity, as well as the state. And some of our graduates go out to other states as well.
We are visiting with Dr. Diane Loeb. She's the chair of the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Baylor University. And this is Baylor Connections. And Dr. Loeb, you mentioned state-of-the-art equipment. And it's kind of fascinating what all the tools that you use, some which are very medical and probably mm-hmm. a little intimidating to those of us who aren't a part of that field, and some which seem very accessible as well. I saw a report on television in Waco in which you were working, actually mentioned the singers, working with a singer, and you had a video game with, I think, a blimp that they had to keep aloft by singing in the right pitch. And as long as they were singing in the right pitch that was best for their voice, the blimp would stay aloft. And it was a game concept to get them to sing properly. Why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of that interplay between the state-of-the-art equipment that we might not know about and then some things that are very accessible like that?
Well, that's a great example that you gave. We can do a lot, so much more nowadays with the advances in technology. For example, on the iPads alone, we're able to utilize games, as you discussed, and we can also use those as communication devices for those who are unable to speak. So there's a wide range of use for technology that can go from being able to help maintain a pitch, as you talked about, to actually helping somebody to communicate words, which is life-changing for an individual to be able to express their needs. So we have something that I guess I would almost consider something like an iPad or a game, almost low-tech nowadays, as well as we have the higher-tech instrumentation where we can scope and look at the vocal folds. So that's more of a medical type of a technique. We also use interactive metronomes for reading fluency and for helping individuals attend to the task at hand. We use FM systems to enhance listening. We also are investing more in neuroscience equipment such as EEGs and other technology that looks at brain activity. And that helps us with understanding the connections between what's happening in the brain and then what's happening behaviorally, what actually comes out of our mouth or what we're understanding. I know in my lab that I'll have that where I'm working with babies born preterm and also young children, we'll be having an eye tracking system that will help us understand at a very early age children's comprehension.
You talk about that. Is there a lot of interdisciplinary work that you do now as part of Baylor's Robbins College of Health and Human Sciences, where you are part of the same college with Baylor HHPR, Human Health Performance and Recreation, and Family and Consumer Sciences? Is that really spark that interdisciplinary work where you can take what you do and what other disciplines impact what you do?
You know, that's a crucial aspect to what we do in speech-language pathology and audiology, is that interprofessional element. It's so important that we work with other professionals, whether they be computer technology, engineering, nurses, occupational therapy, physical therapy, social work. It's so important that we have that knowledge of what they do, and they have the knowledge of what we do, so we can work together for the betterment of the family. So that's, I think, a beauty of the Robbins College and what we're able to do together. And we're in discussions as to how we can best complement each other and provide interdisciplinary or interprofessional services.
Now, Baylor's Robbins College of Health and Human Sciences was formed 3 years ago, and you've been at Kansas for 25 years, but this was an appealing opportunity. Was that a part of what helped draw you here, just that in that collaborative nature, collaborative model?
Absolutely. Collaboration is really key for not only making gains in clinical outcomes, but also for research outcomes. And in a funding atmosphere of today, you really need to reach out and want to reach out and work with other professionals to have more innovative science.
You talk about science. This is obviously what you do is a science, but it almost seems like there's a little bit of an art to what you do as well. When I mentioned seeing that that report on television where y'all were working with the singer, there were also reports, working with an 8-year-old autistic boy who'd been unable to learn to read. So they were using his senses of touch and smell and sight to get him to learn how to read. A 7-year-old who couldn't speak but was working with Velcro images to communicate. It almost seems like practitioners in the speech pathology field, there's a science, but with every person being different, there's a little bit of an art to it. Is that the case?
That is the case. You're absolutely right. And part of it is what you said, you want to individualize your therapy for each person. And each person has something that'll motivate them or make them more likely to be successful. So it does have to be individualized. And so you can't usually buy that in a box. You have to develop it and create it. However, we do have a lot of tools through either technology or even other sources to help us, to guide us more than ever in the past. But that individualized component is key.
What does it mean to you when you see someone have a breakthrough like that?
It's very hard to express. It's a amazing blessing to see someone move from being nonverbal to being able to talk. Even though it may take a long time for some, and for others it may not, and for that individual and their family to be able to communicate, it's everything. It's an amazing blessing.
As we wind down here, the final few minutes on the program, if people have heard this and maybe they think of someone they know who could utilize the services, what should they know about getting involved and perhaps making use of the Baylor Speech, Language, and Hearing Clinic services?
You know, I think that as a parent myself, sometimes I've had concerns about my own children. And because I'm a professional, I know that the thing to do when you do have concerns, whether it be a family member or even a friend that you know, is to recommend that they have the opportunity in our community through our speech, language, and hearing clinic to have that checked out. So if you're concerned about someone's hearing, if you're concerned about their language development, or if they've had some injury to their brain, if you're concerned about their ability to communicate, to understand, to talk, that the best thing to do is to reach out and get the opinion of professionals in the community. And so what I would recommend is that they would contact the Speech, Language, and Hearing Clinic at 254-710-2568. And you can also visit our website, and it talks about the types of services that we provide.
254-710-2568. And, you know, if people go online and look up baylor.edu/CSD, they can also find information about that as well and learn a little bit more about the services offered. So it can start with calling you. It can also start with talking to their own personal doctor who might be able to, if they talk to their doctor about what you all offer, they might be able to recommend them to you as well.
Absolutely. We do get a lot of referrals from physicians in the area. That's one of our key referral sources from teachers in the area, from other speech-language pathologists as well, or parent groups.
You know, and as we wind down, I got to ask you, too, the educational aspect of this. What does it mean to you to not only be serving the community, but to be training up a whole new generation of people who will go out and do that and meet those needs?
Well, it's an amazing experience for me to be able to do that. The students here at Baylor are incredibly bright, talented, and committed young people who really want to make a difference in the world and want to help others through their science and creative means. So it's just a great opportunity to do so.
About how big is your staff, by the way, in terms of professionals in the field?
We've grown, actually, in the past few years, and we'll continue to grow as we build out our graduate and PhD programs. But right now, we have about close to 20 on staff. Many of them are clinical faculty, and then we have about 7 tenure-track faculty. This year alone, we're adding 2 more tenure-track faculty, and as we build our PhD program, we'll be adding 5 more tenure-track faculty. And again, that's all due to the gift that was given to us.
Dr. Loeb, thank you very much. It's been great to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
That is Dr. Diane Loeb. She's the chair of the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Baylor. And again, if you would like to learn more, you can go online to baylor.edu/CSD. This has been Baylor Connections, a weekly conversation with the people shaping our future here at Baylor University. We will talk about key topics in education, research, and more. Of course, today talking about the field of speech pathology. Enjoyed hearing from Dr. Diane Loeb. I want to remind you that you can go online, baylor.edu/connections. If you didn't get to hear all the program and would like to hear it again, baylor.edu/connections. This is Baylor Connections on 103.3 KWBU-FM, Waco.